Live from New York City, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, and I'd like to welcome you to this program, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios in New York City. And I welcome everyone. Today, a special commentary on the current dynamic of becoming an extraordinarily violent society. It'll tie in with the current shootings as well. But I intend to give a little different perspective, or a substantially different perspective, on what really precipitated this. This will follow some thoughts by Dr. Gary Coles, who believes that we should be examining brain-altering psych drugs and in all these shootings. I'll share my thoughts as well as his. I've written a commentary on this, and hopefully it'll provide us with a little different perspective. I realize that every day thousands and thousands of brand new listeners are tuning in. We try to always provide those listeners with the information that will empower them in making their choices. So the latest on health and healing today. Then I'm going to our environmental segment, and I have some really important thoughts about the World Bank, the hypocrisy about telling us, yes, global warming is a major threat, and then financing coal plant operations. Well, how does that work? We'll talk about that. Also, a simple commentary from Al Jazeera about overconsumption. I'll want your feedback on that as well, and your solutions. And then from Fred Pierce from NewEconomics.org, land grabs. You've heard me discuss this repeatedly, how George Soros has been one of the leading voices of all the tech titans, the hedge fund managers, the top guys on Wall Street. Grab land that you can grow food on, because food grown on land will be the number one resource for the future. All right? Where are they grabbing the land? How are they doing it? What are the consequences of the people on that land? A commentary on that. Also, if time permits, regulators are under fire for keeping fracking pollution test results under wraps. Why should they? At what point are we going to say enough? Enough of secrecy. You're keeping the public from knowing the true extent of the pollutants used in gas hydrofracking. It goes into common streams and waters and aquifers, into the soil. We then have locally grown produce, or we bottle water from those aquifers. We drink it. Shouldn't we have a right to know if there's some harm, potential harm? Of course we should. Then why are the bureaucrats, the technocrats, not working on our behalf? And why is no one holding them accountable? I'll deal with that as well. As you see, we have a lot to share. This will be an empowerment hour. Let us begin. Always with something that's positive and upbeat, and something we can use, no matter what our background and beliefs. For example, I believe that we should be using coenzyme Q10 three times a day, in the morning, in the afternoon, and early evening. Why? Because it provides extra oxygen and energy to our brain, to our heart, to our musculature. Now, as a competitive athlete, I always take coenzyme Q10 before I go out for a workout. I take other things as well. But I also notice a difference in the people I work with and counsel who are suffering from some of the ravages of aging, like dementia, memory loss. And by the way, I'm seeing it in younger people. In fact, I just wrote a little article over the weekend where I showed that for the first time, I'm actually counseling men and women in their mid-30s who now have not only gray hair, that's epidemic, but who have memory loss, who clearly are burning out their neurons, and alcohol and drugs and prescription medication destroying the dendrites. Visualize a telephone pole. It is the neuron. the nerve cell, the brain cell. It holds information, but it has to share that information with another cell. To do so, it transfers that information on a wire, a connection. That's your dendrite. And when these start to snap, and when you have a glass of alcohol, they snap. When you have a lot of highly inflammatory foods and beverages, they snap. So part of the old science was that once it snapped, you can never repair it. And therefore, the belief that the brain could never de-age, that the heart could never grow new tissue, that the musculature could never grow new tissue, new muscle, that prevailed for almost 60 years. Now, however, we know you can grow new brain tissue and dendrites and heart tissue. So there's a whole new anti-aging science. In fact, I have a major, major film finished and a book coming out in about 3 months on this very topic. But coenzyme Q10 is right up in there in the top things you can do. It's not that expensive. You should do it daily. And I would suggest starting in the 100 milligram range per dose. Now, it depends upon what you have. If I was working with someone with Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, multiple sclerosis, ALS, it would be much higher. Here's the latest from the Journal of Cardiovascular Disease Research. They say the following, quote, coenzyme Q10 and garlic reduce atherosclerosis progression in a clinical trial. This is big news. It says, the outcome of a trial of middle-aged men which found a protective effect of coenzyme Q10 and garlic against the progression of atherosclerosis and inflammation. The study was on firefighters who were at a risk of cardiovascular events. And coronary artery calcium scanning, which assesses the extent of atherosclerosis, was conducted prior to enrollment at the end of the trial. And what they found was that they also looked at C-reactive protein, a marker of inflammation, before and after the treatment. And those that received the placebo, they didn't have any benefit. But those that received coenzyme Q10 for a year, quote, at the end of the trial, average coronary artery calcium progression was significantly less among those who received coenzyme Q10 and garlic compared to the placebo, which meant they were healthier. They were actually reversing atherosclerosis. That's really good news. So that's something simple, inexpensive, and easy for everyone to do. If we just did one thing out of 1,000 things possible, that would save a lot of people from stroke, heart attack, and loss of memory. Now, we also have some other things we can do. There's a large study that was done in Shanghai. It was called the Shanghai Women's Health Study. It was published in the peer-reviewed journal, the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition. And what they ask is this. Is there an association between how much green tea you drink and cancers of the stomach, esophagus, and colon in these middle-aged Chinese women? This is a big study, 69,000 women between 40 and 70. And they followed them for 12 years. And here's what they conclude. Quote, among regular tea drinkers, those who consumed 3 or more times per week over a period of no less than 6 months had a 14% lower risk of all digestive system cancers observed in comparison with those who did not consume tea. Now, that's substantial, especially if you're dealing with colorectal cancer, which is severe. Now, what if they had tea every day, not just 3 times a week, but 7 times a week? What if they didn't just drink the tea, but they took the green tea capsules, which gives you the equivalent of 5 cups of green tea per day? That would be 35 cups equivalent of green tea per week by taking a single capsule per day. Well, if 3 gives you 14% reduction in these cancers, what would 35 compared to 3 give you? So, needless to say, one more way, inexpensively, easily we can reduce the risk of cancers of the digestive system is with green tea. I would suggest between 250 and 1,000 milligrams of decaffeinated green tea per day. Also, for those women who are concerned about osteoporosis in menopause or premenopause, perimenopause, or postmenopause, which is at its most severe when you lose minerals, good news from a study that was in PLOS One, a major medical scientific journal. Here's what it says. This was done at Mount Sinai School of Medicine in New York. Vitamin C supplementation shows potential for menopausal bone loss prevention. And what it shows is that as you're losing your balance of hormones during menopause, you also have a greater osteoporosis risk. And by taking vitamin C, that substantially protects your bones. That's how simple it is. That's good news. Also, from the Journal of the American Medical Association, comes an article showing the reduction in the risk of cancer among male physicians who consumed a multi-nutrient supplement. The trial included 14,000 men, 50 or older, enrolled in the physician's health study, meaning their doctors. And what they did is they found that there was a statistically significant reduction in cancers, overall, all cancers, compared to those who received a placebo. So that's, once again, good information. So we've learned how men can reduce their risk of cancer. Women can reduce the risk of osteoporosis. Women can reduce the risk of digestive cancers. We can energize the brain and the heart and the musculature. We can reduce atherosclerosis and all that using natural non-toxic techniques. Well, let's say that you're a person suffering from insomnia. And a lot of senior citizens just don't get a good night's sleep. Well, here's the problem. If you're not getting a good night's sleep, your immune system is going to take a hit. So what do we do to get you a good night's sleep and strengthen your immune system? Now let's add one more little thing into it. Let's say that you're not getting enough exercise and you're also suffering from dementia or Alzheimer's. Well, then you've got nothing but negatives. Yet, in the peer-reviewed journal Neurobiology of Aging, researchers in Spain described the benefits of exercising and using the hormone melatonin for Alzheimer's disease. 10 milligrams of melatonin and made an enormous difference. So by exercising using melatonin, you'll get a good night's sleep, you'll be able to strengthen your immune system, and you'll be able to help yourself if you have Alzheimer's. And finally, increase lycopene, lyco, L-I-C-O, pene, P-E-N-E. When you have a lowered lower your risk of stroke when you have more lycopene. Now, this was published in the peer-reviewed journal Neurology. It was a Finnish study, and it showed that the carotenoid lycopene, you're going to get it from tomatoes. So when you have tomato juice, that's good. Tomato soup, that's good. Any form of tomato sauce, that's excellent. And they used 1,031 men in this ischemic heart disease risk factor cohort study. And they found that, hey, when you got that lycopene, by the way, you can also get lycopene from watermelon and raspberries and dark cherries, reds, red peppers. So the more red you get, the less your risk of a stroke. How about that? Published in the peer-reviewed journal, a major study, big-time reduction, 25%. Participants had a 59% lower just risk of stroke. So that's almost 60% reduction of a stroke with just lycopene. Now, what if they added in vitamin C and garlic? They would have lowered the risk even more. And finally, higher levels of vitamin D, our sunshine vitamin, is associated with fewer multiple sclerosis symptoms. This is from the Annals of Neurology, the peer-reviewed journal. This was done at the University of California, San Francisco. And here's what it says. A 5-year study of 469 men and women with multiple sclerosis who underwent yearly blood testing for vitamin D and brain magnetic resonance imaging, MRIs, to evaluate disease progression. And they found that there was a substantial correlation, almost a 32% lower risk of having more of the MRI deterioration if you took vitamin D. So the more vitamin D, the less the symptoms of multiple sclerosis. So that's important. That's the latest on health and nutrition. Tomorrow, are you cooking yourself to death? The danger of overcooked or just regularly cooked food. Even more information on coenzyme Q10, but in depth. I'm going to do a classroom on the air on it. And fixing your digestive problems, the five best and the five worst foods for digestion. Things that I always try to factor in. What if you're on a limited income? What if you don't necessarily have the availability of all the things? So I always try to look not for the most expensive or exotic, but things that everybody could find. That's for tomorrow on Health and Nutrition, how we open up all of our programs. Now, I'm going to go to a commentary before we go to my guest. By the way, my guest today will be Dr. Charles Gant. He is an MD and PhD. He's been practicing medicine for over 35 years. He has got his degree from the University of Virginia Medical School and a PhD from university. And we're going to talk about the Sandy Point school tragedy. And was it a case of prescription psychiatric drugs? Will violence increase in the future after the release of the Diagnostico Manual 5? Also, let me mention that our progressive commentary hour today at 7 p.m., which is the most downloaded program we do, is going to focus on looking back at Fukushima. It continues to be a major worldwide threat. We're going to look at the newest evidence on the extent of the catastrophe, both in Japan and elsewhere, and the future of nuclear power. My guests will include Dr. Helen Caldicott, possibly the single most articulate and passionate advocate for citizens' action to counter the nuclear and environmental crisis. She's a medical doctor. Joseph Mangano, executive director of the Radiation Public Health Project, and others who will be joining in that program. That's Progressive Commentary Hour, 7 p.m. And also, I will be doing a commentary, if time permits, a little later on in this program. But first, I want to share some of my own thoughts, as well as those of Dr. Gary Coles. Yes, this tragedy should focus upon all possible explanations. There should be an open forum where no reasonable discussion is excluded. I believe that we must take an honest look at what happens when a society is ethically, spiritually, and morally connected to each other, as well as to their actions. Hence, when I was growing up in West Virginia, everyone I knew owned a gun. They were taught by generally their father or brothers or mother how to shoot a gun. I cannot recall a single incident ever growing up where anyone shot anyone. What was the difference then, and what is the difference today? And should we focus exclusively upon owning guns or registering guns? Are there any other factors that should also be examined? And I believe the answer is we must broaden the dialogue. When the shooting occurred in Arizona, it was all about gun control. It was not about the psychiatric drugs that the person who was the shooter of the congresswoman was on, nor the type of psychiatric diagnosis the person had and what they had revealed during their sessions. I have tracked, over the last 20 years, every mass shooting in the United States and indeed around Europe, and have found that over 95% of all school shootings and mass shootings have been by people who are on antipsychotic medications. That is never, however, given the blame. I believe that that is partly because the enormous influence the pharmaceutical industry has over controlling media content and talking points. Why aren't we talking about the nature of violent entertainment? Call to Duty just passed $1 billion, that's with a B, billion dollars in profit from a single film. It's one of these animated films. It's pure violence. That industry alone is a mammoth industry. It's all about violence and you participating in that violence if you buy the game. Also, what about the video game industry? It has become an addiction to expressing violent impulses, and the studies so support that. What about all the violent professional contact sports where people are actually drawn to the sport and applaud the nature of its violence? If you watch a football game, yes, there is skill, and I love sports. I am an athlete. I played varsity basketball as a guard in college. I've always been a track and field enthusiast and have competed in more than 650 races in World Games. I love the sport, and I love the all sports, but I do not like what a lot of sports has become. Megalomania, pure profiteering, exploiting a person's success or fame or market share for the most money they can get, but also the violence. People posturing about violence. And that's contact sports. Why aren't we willing to look at the food industry and the impact of a brain chemistry on vulnerable minds and brains of children when they start taking high fructose corn syrup or caffeinated beverages? I am a school teacher. I've taught for 30 years. I've taught at the College of New Rochelle. I've taught at the New School for Social Research, at Pratt Institute. I've taught in many different environments, including Fairleigh Dickinson. So I'm familiar with what goes on in a classroom. I also know that having spoken with thousands of teachers over the years, they're telling me they're seeing something new in classrooms that when they were growing up or their parents growing up was rare. Children coming to school literally so wired, they're bouncing off the walls. One woman came up to me yesterday. I was getting some juice before my evening show, and the woman said, "What are your thoughts about this shooting?" And I said, "We must have an inclusive dialogue that allows people who want to look at the nature of altered brain chemistry, altered social relationships, the nature of parenting. All of this must be discussed today, not just the availability of guns. That's important. Absolutely. I agree. But it shouldn't be the only thing discussed." And that's how the media is going to ratchet it now. And she said, "I just thought you should know. I'm a psychologist. My husband is a physician. Our three sons were all diagnosed with ADD and ADHD. They couldn't pay attention in class. They were all put on drugs like Ritalin. And it was not until I heard a program of yours 4 years ago that I realized that they were staying up to any hour they wanted. There was virtually no disciplining them. They would be on a cell phone nonstop and on their computer. They would get up in the morning and be so tired because they'd stayed up till 2 or 3 or 4 in the morning. And now when they were expected to get up, they couldn't. So they would have enormous amounts of cola. One of my sons would have three double colas in the morning. Only after I heard your show that you're loading them up with sugar and caffeine, my sons, then I did an analysis and I figured that they were consuming about 800 to 1,000 milligrams of caffeine a day. I looked at the literature. That extreme amount of caffeine can cause agitation, antisocial behavior, hyperkinetic behavior, and then the amount of sugar, 60 teaspoons of sugar per day per child. No wonder their adrenals were exhausted. No wonder their behavior was so aggressive. I took them through a three-week detoxification. My husband was not supportive. We had multiple arguments on this. He refused to accept there was any connection between caffeine and sugar and their behavior. I saw it. My children normaled out, calmed down, and now are no longer diagnosed. That nearly cost me my marriage, but it saved my children. I hope you talk about this on your show tomorrow. So there are people in our society who realize, especially school teachers, because they're in the front line, they see it every day, of which child could go off in a heartbeat based upon how altered their body chemistry is from medications to the food. Also, why is it that we're not challenging our military-style weapons, that our militarized culture? Now, mind you, everywhere we glamorize and we salute this militarization of mass murder, meaning you have a license to kill, the new movie about killing Osama bin Laden, it's all about kill. It's all about weapons. It's all about the clothes you wear, the kind of khaki shorts you wear, and we've militarized the police. Now just imagine being in Russia on Friday, and you want to protest a law just signed in by Putin that makes it a criminal act to protest without first getting official authorization and permission from the government to protest. So if you're going to protest against the government, you're not allowed a permit. Against any corporation related to the state, you're not allowed to. In effect, there's total censorship, and you can get a steep sentence, $20,000-$30,000 fine if you're an organizer, $7,000 if you're just a person showing up, and then prison time. And yet, look at the police. All the police in every country of the world becomes a part of the official, glamorized, hyper-lethal military force, always to protect power, never to protect or side with the citizens. It was the case in Tunisia, in Egypt, at least initially, and in Saudi Arabia. But guess what is the most militarized, outside of China, country in the world? The United States. Do you see our police acting responsibly and reasonably? Not at all. They are showing themselves as the lethal force to protect the most powerful, ruthless, criminal, corrupt, sociopathic, and psychopathic people in the world, our political and industrial leaders. Do you see the degeneracy of a man spraying pepper spray directly and repeatedly in the eyes of demonstrators who hold no arms, who are sitting peacefully on the ground, who have a right to protest, yet now we've criminalized the person for protesting, and we have immortalized the heroic, hyper-vigilant protector of the status quo, the police. Shame on us for making the police our new social protective order corps, one step away from Nazis, one step away. Mark my words, that step will be taken in the next 2 to 3 years. And yet we do not look at that as a problem. Look at all the presidents, the governors, the Supreme Court judges, and the congresspersons, the vast majority, who apathetically vote together or sit on existing rational harm reduction legislation that could do so much to prevent these mass homicides. And let us not leave out of this mix the church leaders of all the religions and those leaders within those religions, not all of those religious leaders would support violence, but do not condemn the violence in the Old Testament. Actually embrace it to justify religious cleansing and rejection. The Catholic Church is the highest of the list, and that has been done historically. Even later, hundreds of years later, finally someone takes a moment and apologizes for genocide. Genocide against the Native Americans. Genocide against the peoples of the world. But look at how many religious leaders today believe that you must be militaristic. You must support your country. If you're going over to Iraq, don't ever concern yourself with a dead Iraqi child, because that is just an item. We're disconnected from we're disconnected from everything that shows that we care about life except our own. So what role do they have? Now, maybe I'm missing something, but wasn't the golden rule about nonviolence the ethics of Jesus? And yet, who is following it? So we have no shortages of people to put into this. Now we go to what Dr. Coles is concerned with, and myself as well, and our guest in a moment, and that is the big pharma, the multinational pharmaceutical companies. The drug industry advertises, and it's diabolically shaping public attitudes and behavior, where it's normal for college students and teenagers and even preschool to think it's okay to take a medication to deal with nature and life's normal ups and downs. Got an emotional problem? Take a pill. Do they tell you the side effects of those pills? No, because first they had to get an obedient, almost a cult-like belief by physicians, which they now have. The cult of American medicine is to be efficient and to be obedient to following what is the perverse and completely corrupt standards of medical care. You can kill or injure every single patient. You'll be rewarded and praised as long as you're doing it by the rules that have been accepted. Cure them by an alternative method and you will be punished. So first you have to get Big Pharma to convince through the magazines they control and the editorial content and the scientists they hire and the physicians they give stipends to and the legislators they oversee to make it one word, truth on their side. So if they say you need these drugs, then who is to question them? And hence you do not have questioning. You also don't have the forensic and pharmaceutical research looking at what is the actual results. Let me give you some actual examples to show you that this is not hyperbole. This is from the physician's desk reference. This lists the following common adverse reactions or side effects, or the actual effects of the selective serotonin reuptake antidepressants. These are also used by people in these mass killings. Manic reaction or mania. Hypermania, meaning you're using very poor judgment, impulsivity, abnormal thinking, hallucinations, personality disorder, amnesia, agitation, extreme psychoses, abnormal dreams, emotional ability, alcohol abuse and craving, hostility, paranoid reactions, confusion, delusions, akathisia, withdrawal syndrome, and impulsivity. That's the actual impact of using this. Now, why don't you take a look at some of the people who were on these medications and some of the shootings? We have collected 5,000 shootings, 66 different school shootings, all involved with psychiatric medication, like Prozac, for example. Examples of a few: Eric Harris, age 17, Zoloft and Luvox, and Dylan Klebold, Columbine shooting in Littleton. 12 students killed, one teacher injured 23. Then they killed themselves. Klebold's medical records have never been made public. Jeff Weiss, age 16, he was taking 60 milligrams a day of Prozac, three times the average starting dose for adults. When he shot his grandfather's girlfriend, and many other students at Red Lake, Minnesota. He then shot himself. 10 dead, 12 wounded. Corey Badsgard, age 16, in Washington State, was on Paxil, which caused him to have hallucinations. I interviewed him extensively. He said that he woke up and couldn't remember a thing. He woke up and he was in the sheriff's office. He didn't know why he was there. He didn't know what he had done. He took a gun into class to kill people. 13-year-old Chris Fetters killed his favorite aunt while taking Prozac. 12-year-old Christopher Pittman murdered both his grandparents while taking Zoloft. 13-year-old Matthew Miller hung himself in his bedroom closet after taking Zoloft for 6 days. 15-year-old Gerard Victor stabbed his grandmother 61 times after 5 days on Paxil. 15-year-old Kip Kingle, on Prozac and Ritalin, shot his parents while they slept, then went to school and opened fire, killing two classmates, injuring 22 others. And that was just a short time after taking Prozac. Luke Woodham, age 16, on Prozac, killed his mother and killed two students, wounded six others. We also have Pocatilla on Zoloft, Michael Carneal on Ritalin. 14-year-old opened fire on students at a high school prayer meeting in West Kentucky. 3 killed. Young man in Huntsville, Alabama was on Ritalin, went psychotic, chopping up his parents with an axe and also killing one sibling and almost murdering another. Andrew Golden, age 11, Ritalin, and Michael Johnson, 14, on Ritalin, shot 15 people, killing 4 students, 1 teacher. T.J. Solomon, age 15, on Ritalin, high school student in Conyers, Georgia, opened fire on and wounded 6 of his classmates. Rod Matthews, age 14, on Ritalin, beat a classmate to death with a bat. James Wilson, age 19, on multiple psychiatric drugs in Breenwood, South Carolina, took a .22 caliber revolver into an elementary school and killed 2 young girls, wounded 7 others. Elizabeth Bush, she was 13, on Paxil, went on a shooting spree in Pennsylvania. Jason Hoffman, on Effexor and Celexa, school shooting in Cajun, California. Gerald Victor, age 15, on Paxil. After 5 doses on Paxil, he stabbed his grandmother 61 times. Chris Shanahan, age 15, on Paxil in Idaho, and went out and killed a woman. Jeff Franklin, on Prozac and Ritalin, Huntsville, Alabama, killed his parents and came home from work using a sledgehammer, hatchet, and a butcher knife and mechanics file, then attacked his younger brothers and sister. Neil Furrow, on Prozac, L.A. Jewish school shooting reported to have been court-ordered to be on Prozac, along with several other medications. Kevin Ryder, age 14, while withdrawing from Prozac when he died from a gunshot wound to his head. Alex Kim, age 13, hung himself soon after being on Lexapro. Then his prescription was doubled. Diane Ruthlier was prescribed Wellbutrin for gallbladder problems 6 days later after suffering many adverse effects of drugs. She shot herself. We have 5,000 examples. Why aren't these being discussed? I'm Gary Nall. Those are my thoughts. Now time for your feedback. This is our opportunity on TalkBack for you to call in and share your comments and points of view. I'd very much appreciate hearing from you. Please give us a call now at 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. I'm Gary Nall, back in a moment. Please stay with us.
Heaven, I'm in heaven, and my heart beats so that I can hardly speak, and I seem to find the happiness I seek when we're out together dancing cheek to cheek. Heaven, I'm in heaven, and the cares that hung around me through the week seem to vanish like a gambler's lucky streak when we're out together dancing cheek to cheek. Oh, I love to climb a mountain and to reach the highest peak, but it doesn't thrill me half as much as dancing cheek to cheek. Oh, I love to go out fishing in the river or a...
Nice to have you with us, everyone, in our TalkBack segment. Let's say hello to James from Queens. Hi, James. Your turn, please.
Doctor, I was wondering, why is it that these ministers from all the religions cannot come together and deal with the motion picture industry? Years ago, when I was in the church, we had something called Society of Legion of Decency that took an oath to screen these pictures and make sure that our young people don't become corrupted by this system. But for some reason, the whole society has gone deaf dumb to saying, okay, we'll accept what parental guidance and all that. But in reality, it's all about corruption. And young people, you give them supposed to be a spiritual value, and you wind up giving them material, even this holiday, Christmas, all material, nothing spiritual. And I think that's what's destroying this country and the people.
Very good comments. Thank you, James. Let us remember that it is first and foremost responsibility of the parent or parents and beyond that, the extended family, aunts and uncles, grandparents, to instill that freedom is only of value and virtue to oneself and their family and society if it is bounded by responsible attitudes and emotional and spiritual values. Therefore, if the family fails, then of course it would be to the religious institutions to try to mandate some moral responsibility in the equation. But in our nature to want having nothing to be censored, we also frequently cross over the line to say what happens when someone who may not have the either the intellectual or the emotional ability to understand how they're being manipulated by the violence and the gratuitous sense of exploitative material in a film, whether television or radio or motion picture. I appreciate your input. Before we go to our guests, we have a lot of people. Let's say hello to Maria from Staten Island. Hi, Maria.
Hi, Gary. How are you?
Good.
Gary, I just want to thank you for providing the other side of this epidemic of tragedies. I agree with you wholeheartedly. I wish the media would pick up on some of the stuff you're discussing. And I don't know how other parents can actually get a handle on, you know, really looking at the situation they're putting their children in. But I appreciate everything you say. I really do.
Thank you, Maria. And Elle from New Jersey, you'll be our last call, Elle, before we go to our guest. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Gary. Thanks for informing us. We seem to be a society of people that are just not informed. It's not that we're not intelligent people, but we're just not informed. And I always say we should impeach the media sometimes because what they report is just fiction. I almost feel like in the wake of this recent tragedy in Sandy Hook, that parents might perhaps band together, maybe boycott school and hire tutors and have their children schooled elsewhere until the townships can decide that their children will be safe. There have just been too many of these shootings and just waiting for political figures to make decisions for parents seems a little crazy to me.
Well, the very political people who have control over the system have contributed to the system and its problems. I cannot separate them out from the larger prevailing problems of having teen screen, children's put on medications, the overdiagnosing, the overprescribing for ADD, ADHD, and the 25% of all American women are now on some form of antipsychotic medication or antidepressant medication. There is no need for that in the vast, vast, vast majority of cases. So it is the acceptance of a new norm, but the norm is not a healthy norm and not one that we should be promoting, and we are. I appreciate your comments, Al. Thank you. Before we go to our guest who's standing by, and we're going to speak with him in a second, he is in Washington, D.C., Dr. Charles Gant, who I gave you a little background on him earlier at the top of the show. Jason, our program director, just came in. Hi, Jason.
Good afternoon, Gary. I just wanted to tell our fans some great news again. We are happy to say that out of 40,000 internet radio stations in the United States, Canada, and Mexico, if you do a Google search on internet radios, we come up number 2 out of 21 million searches. That's astonishing, and we really love our fans who continue to support our great progressive hosts, Mike Fader, Michael Rupert, Helen Caldicott, and Nutrice Leeds. And they keep coming back to our site, Guy, for one thing, articles. We give them the best progressive minds in categories, GMOs, solar flares, the veterans that we help out, this diabetes, AIDS, and the economic crisis that we're dealing with. We give them the best articles in over 45 different topics that they can choose from to look over, and we have everything for them. So we would like to thank them for keep making us growing and growing and keep telling people to join us for this great movement.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We do have a forum for sharing with people information that is not an establishment point of view. It is a progressive or truth-based point of view. And right now, today, we're putting up the most definitive article that we're aware of ever written on the subject of GMOs, but more importantly, the whole bottom half of that article are all the different agencies and groups and grassroots supports that you can go to get GMOs labeled in your state, to protest against GMOs. All the resources you need are there. We had just finished writing this, Richard Gale and myself. It's up as of today on our website. Now let's go over and say hello to Dr. Charles Gant. Nice to have you with us today, Dr. Gant.
Hang up. We'll press hold for
hello.
Further options.
Dr. Gant? Is Dr. Gant?
Yes, hello.
Hi, Dr. Gant. Dr. Gant, I'd like for you to take us on a look at the whole idea that so many people committing crimes today are on psychiatric medications, and we never bring this into the mix. We seem to have an inability to examine honestly violent acts committed on psychiatric drugs. There are more than 3,000 deaths a month attributed to psychiatric and psychotropic drugs. That's 3,000 a month. And this is a huge problem. And yet the pharmaceutical cartel and our health agencies will not bring this into our purview of discussion. Will you talk about this, please?
Yes, well, I was listening to the commentary and your presentation, and that's a beautiful example of the denial that exists out there about drugs in general, because you presented the evidence and then people called in and said, we got to do something about the schools, we got to do something about the values, about the Hollywood. And it's not about Hollywood, it's not about video games. On CNN this morning, they were blaming his mother. It's not bullying or any psychobabble. It's about the fact that the frontal lobes, the executive function of the brain, is made dysfunctional by psychiatric medication. So the ability to have empathy, we know from brain scans, empathy, compassion, executive decisions, impulse inhibition, and the younger you are, the more vulnerable you are to this neurological fact. The media can't talk about it because their advertising sponsors, you know, are paying for the show. The politicians can't talk about it because of their campaign contributions from Big Pharma. The medical profession can't talk about it because of the research grants and the ski vacations. And the public can't talk about it because they're consuming psych meds. I mean, a lot of the public is consuming psych meds like candy. So we have to remain in this denial and then scurry around and bring up all kinds of illusory explanations for motives. There is no motive. Without frontal lobes, you don't have a motive. You know, it's there's no such thing as a motive. You just act on impulse, and you may not even remember what you do. So, I mean, I don't know, Gary. How long is the denial going to go on? I guess we just have to keep trying and trying to get the message out there until people wake up to it.
Well, let's use something specific. It is reported that Adam Lanza, the shooter here, had been diagnosed with autism or Asperger's disorder, personality disorder. And the drug of choice there is, more often than not, it is called fluvoxamine, also commonly known as Luvox. Now, research that I just showed this morning from the Mayo Clinic is that it has an 840% higher risk of violence than other drugs. So if he was on these, and others have been on these and committed acts of violence, why can't we at least look at this as a starting point instead of always coming back? You look at Prozac, Paxil, Strattera, Halcyon, Luvox, Effexor. All of these are known to have a minor or major violence as one of the effects.
I think it's more than that. I think it's, you know, it goes back to the old Tom Cruise, Brooke Shields dispute, where there were two questions. Do biochemical imbalances cause psychiatric symptoms? And Brooke Shields says yes, Tom Cruise says no. And are drugs the treatment of first resort for chronic psychiatric disorders? Tom Cruise, of course, said no, and Brooke Shields says yes. And they're both wrong, and they're both right. The public generally is only offered psych meds or psychotherapy, and those are two extremist positions about this. There's a middle position, which is there are biochemical imbalances that cause the frontal lobes to dysfunction, and psych meds are the very last resort. there are dozens of things we can do to improve brain function rather than having to use psych meds. So it's back to that same argument again. We have to offer this third choice. We got to treat food allergies. We got to deal with toxicities, nutritional deficiencies, junk food, the gut problems, chronic infections. I have patients with Lyme and Candida that act psychotic, and they simply have infections. When you add psych meds to that mix, you drive a person who's already toxic, nutritionally deficient, immunologically in a train wreck. You drive them into further toxicity and imbalances, and it's a wonder there aren't more school shootings like this.
Let's take a few moments, if you would please, and talk about the new upcoming Diagnostic and Statistical Manual number 5, which, from my understanding, could literally make every single human emotion that we express when we're having any form of crisis or problems or stress into a psychiatric disorder, into a mental illness, into something that we could then be mandated to address medically.
Yeah, there's even a diagnosis called misery and unhappiness disorder, which is most people I know. And there's another diagnosis called elective mutism, which means where you decide to keep your mouth shut. I mean, we've pathologized everything now. We have a label for it. That whole argument goes back to the dictionary. There's two definitions of the word diagnosis. One, you diagnose the appearance of something, which is what they do in the DSM. And two, the second definition of diagnosis is you define the cause. And we're at the point now where we can actually define the causes of psychiatric disorders by functional medicine testing and careful genomic testing, rather than just throwing a label at somebody and then start throwing drugs at them to see what happened. So pneumonia was called pneumonia for 2,000 years. We didn't know what caused it. But then we discovered germs, science moved ahead, and now we found the cause of pneumonia, and then that allows our treatment to get very specific. So we can get very, very specific with the treatment for psychiatric disorders, and we're moving through this transition, and the poor consumers out there are caught between these two, a scientific world of functional medicine and genomics and a pre-scientific world where you just dream up some kind of a label and then throw drugs at it to see what happens.
But the labeling of a normal condition as a disease is very profitable because...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and the medical community, the 700,000-plus doctors have refused to stand up and examine, is there any real science, legitimate independent science, that proves that the disorders you just mentioned actually exist? If they don't, then it will become normal, and it'll become routine, and it'll become standard, and it'll get a code, and therefore people get insurance to cover it. And that's what happens if we don't address it.
Well, in the DSM-4, in the beginning, there's a discussion, a thoughtful discussion about this, and they use the term heterogeneous, which means every diagnostic code is heterogeneous, of many causes, of unlike natures, is what the word means. So they're basically saying if you take 1,000 people with ADHD or bipolar disorder, underneath it all, if you actually look for the risk factors and biochemical and toxicological and immunological causes, they're all completely different, even if they're acting the same. They're heterogeneous. So these are just labels to more or less get on the page, but they say nothing at all about the causalities, which we are now technologically in a position to do something about.
Final question for you. What do you see we as a society should do to try to understand what it is to be a young person today and to help them deal with the issues of being a young person when they haven't had the opportunity to have the wise men and women of long ago help them in the transitions they need in life? Instead, we're giving them a pill and a diagnosis to get through this particular time.
Well, I would ban psychotropic drugs for anybody 18 and younger because their frontal lobes can't take it. They're they're in that developmental stage where they're hardwiring the brains. Chemicals screw up that hardwiring. I mean, you might even take it out to the age of 23. But at least by 18, no alcohol, no pot, drug testing on everybody, very stiff laws if anybody puts a psychotropic drug into a youngster. Then at a certain age, once the brain's hardwired, I'm fairly libertarian about drug abuse. I don't believe in the war on drugs. I don't believe in big government knocking my door down if I want to smoke a joint. I mean, I'm against all drug abuse, but I have a Voltaire-like position about it that I'll defend to the death anybody's right to use chemicals that's an adult.
But that's not what we're talking about. I get your point. For children 18 or 23 or under, they shouldn't use any of these drugs, and the people giving them to them should be held legally accountable. Dr. Charles Gant, thank you very much. MD, PhD, his book is ADD and ADHD Complementary Medical Solutions, as well as End Your Addiction Now. His website is CEGANT.com and NIHDC.com. I'm Gary Nall. That brings up the end of this program, and I want to thank you all for listening. For those of you who are listening over the internet, continue. For those of you who are listening on the telephone at 832-280-0066, we'll continue. Let's now say hello to Luann Panessi, who's standing by. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary. Well, that was the most powerful list of people who have been on psychotropics and the side effects that I've ever heard as a nurse. And I also want to tell you that I have a nephew that has very severe Asperger's, and he was on medications, and he did have a lot of self-destructive behavior to the point where my sister-in-law and brother had to institutionalize him. And when they came out, they finally came to their senses and said they were ready to follow your protocol. Well, this young man has been off of medications now for 6 years. He is functional. He doesn't have these emotional outbursts. He's not doing self-destructive and societal destructive behavior anymore. And so I know that you're spot on with this, and we shouldn't be paying attention. We should be putting less attention on gun control, of course, and a whole lot more on the root cause, which is just like what they do with everything. That's how all of our systems run. So I definitely agree with that list. I have something here, Karen from Baltimore. She says, I've worked at my job for 18 years. I am bored to death. I listen to you in Washington, D.C., and I'm at age 41, and I'm ready to start my life again. And she says, when you were down here recently, you said that there was going to be a movement back to the land. She says, I hear you're doing a homesteading project. She's asking, what is the status of that?
It is my belief that in the next 2 to 3 years, based upon a culmination of environmental crisis, economic crisis, social crisis, and interpersonal crisis, that people will decide for different reasons that they should go back to a simpler, higher quality way of living and getting back into nature, smaller communities, and becoming more self-sufficient, more quality time doing the things they really enjoy, and spending time on themselves, being less stressed. To help people in this effort, I am in the process now of creating a artisan's village, a homesteading village, a veteran's village, and some others, a Socrates village, which I'll discuss later. All these are happening, and after January, I will put the word out for those who are interested in knowing more about the homesteading part of that, because I'll be interviewing people who want to participate, because it'll all be done at that point. And I've been quietly working on getting it all done and filming it and photographing each stage, so then people all over the world can then do that at any scale they want in their own home. For example, if they want to have... let's say they want to grow microgreens or sprouts. How do you grow them? Where is the best place to getting the seeds, the heirloom organic seeds? What steps are needed? If you want to mulch, how do you mulch? How do you take some plants that you're cutting away and weeds and turn those into, in 6 months, rich soil? How do you get stuff to market? How do you keep it from going wilted and no one wants to buy it? All the things that pop up, all the questions, all the concerns, I'm addressing. and then I'll share that. And most importantly, I'll be selecting probably 10, 15 people who want to actually go and live in a homesteading environment where they have their own homestead. This is not a hippie, you know, go and, you know, sit in a field someplace and have someone pay for your room and board. That's not what I'm about, friends. I'm about people who want to work. You don't want to work, don't come see me. So anyhow, if I'm out there working, I expect everyone else to be working. But I'm definitely willing to help people who are highly motivated, very positive, and want to get close to land and just master the skills so they become self-sufficient. That's what this is about. I just came not long ago from a place out in out west that was a popular, well-known, almost like a commune. I didn't see anybody working. Everybody was lazy. Everybody walking around in this kind of long yoga outfits with long hair from India or someplace. Everybody chanting. And yet food was rotten. It was just disgustingly scuzzy. And then I just sat and watched all this, and I told the owner, I said, man, you better reconsider or you're going to lose this place. Well, they lost the place, turns out, because they had a lot of freeloaders jumping in there thinking, oh, let's all rub our third chakra. And I'm saying, no, go out there and work in the soil. Oh, gee whiz, that's work, dude. Yeah, it's work. So you got to make sure that no matter what you're doing, you're aligning yourself with people who have a good work ethic, a good attitude, and want to become self-sufficient. If you can do that, then you've got a bright, happy, positive, healthy future. If not, then you're going to have to see what the future provides you. But I'm working to have a concept of a homestead, which is not a commune. It's not a shared living. It is not an eco village. It's not a cult. It's not a personality-driven environment. Rather, it's a sustainable environment where people work together, but each one on their own project until that project is mastered, and they can then share the benefits of that with other people. So in other words, one person is growing, making bread, another person is growing sprouts. You share. The person has the bread, shares with the sprouts. So everybody has everything that they need, working themselves, but sharing, and then taking it to market. So it's a different concept than anything that exists. It does not exist now anywhere in the world. Zip, I've looked everywhere, this particular concept. But it's being done. But I'm not going to let anyone know about it until it's 100% done, fully functional. Then I'll invite people in who want to be a part to participate. Or they can watch it over the internet and do it anywhere they are in the world. We're out of time. Let's say hello to Utrice Lead, who is standing by, ready to do her program. Hi, Utrice.
Hello, Gary. Well, you dealt with the psychological part, and I'm going to go with the legislative part to the Sandy Hook Elementary School massacre on December the 14th.
Great. We look forward to hearing you. Utrice Lead, Monday to Friday, following our program. Very popular. She's right here, starting in 60 seconds.